Leonard Jordan, farmer, preacher, theologian, translator of the Bible, lecturer, author of a number of books. He was born in Georgia, Sumter County, with a degree. He came to us here at Southern Seminary with a degree in agriculture, received a Ph.D. in Greek. Dr. Robertson was his major professor, but unfortunately Dr. Robertson died while Clarence was in the process of pursuing his doctor's degree. Clarence became superintendent of City Missions for the Long Run Baptist Association in 1939. In 1940, he came to Southern Seminary at the invitation of Dr. Sampey to speak in chapel. The chapel was in the north wing of Norton Hall, where all those offices are, faculty offices are now. And I was a first-year seminary. Clarence spoke, and he made the observation and threw out a challenge. He said, if there is a young Baptist preacher in this group today who does not have aspirations to be pastor of the First Baptist Church in Podunk Holler, there is an area in the city of Louisville that has 10,000 unchurched people in it. Well, that kept running through my mind for several weeks, and finally I went down to the old Haymarket area, which was not only a famous place, but it was an infamous place. I became the pastor of the mission and finally superintendent. It developed into the largest mission of its kind among Southern Baptists. To give you a concept of an idea of the community, there were 90 whiskey stores, honky-tonks, nightclubs, houses of ill repute, and gambling dens in a radius of 3 blocks of where I live for several years. How do I know? I was going to write my doctoral dissertation on that subject, on a subject bearing on this problem. So I got Dr. Cutack, who's chairman of the Department of Sociology at the University of Louisville, to help me to work out a schedule, and I still have the results of it. Filed away. I never did finish the thesis on that particular subject. So, you know, if you're writing a doctoral dissertation, you have to have some erudite terminology, you know. So I think I was going to do something on commercial recreation in an area in transition in an urban community. But it never came off. But Clarence, I lived in the old Haymarket, the old ghetto there, and Clarence lived in the West End. We were the two great missionaries in the city of Louisville. But in 1942, Clarence went to Americus, Georgia, 8 miles below Americus, Georgia, and established was called the Koinonia Farm. Now, there were 400 acres of land there, run down, eroded land. A mutual friend of ours gave him enough to make a down payment, and a few of us gave him enough to buy an acre. So he got in business there. His purpose was to build a community of Christian fellowship for people of all races and to demonstrate. This was in 1942. To demonstrate that you can have a Christian community in Southwest Georgia. Well, it takes a lot of faith, or it did then in those days, to have that kind of vision and implement it. Well, you know the story. The papers carried it, the magazines and books today. When the community discovered, by the way, Clarence helped there was another purpose there, and that was to help the farmers in the area. Clarence was a genius, and not only in Greek, but he was a genius in agriculture. And he helped the farmers all around that. Clarence's hens laid more eggs than any hens in Georgia. And Georgia used to be a peach state. It became a chicken state because Clarence taught those people how to raise chickens. Well, they found out that they all ate around the same table, black and white. So, what happened? 80 Ku Kluxers pulled up in the front yard out there on the farm and ordered Clarence to leave the county. And he opined that he didn't feel like he wanted to. And he didn't. So his people in Koinonia, one, were excommunicated from the Baptist church there. They were beaten when they went downtown. They were boycotted. Their place was bombed. Clarence and his daughter were almost killed once. The tracer bullets going through his windows burned the curtains off of the from around the windows. The only access he had to the outside world was through mailing. So he mailed pecans and stayed alive. By 1968, there were only two families there, Clarence and Florence, his wife, and the Whitcampers. They stayed. And Clarence was about to give up on it, were thinking about it. They were praying about it. Maybe we ought to move somewhere else. Maybe to Pennsylvania, because he was acquainted with the brethren. And he was thinking about this. And a young man came along one day. His name was Millard Fuller. He was a multimillionaire. Pulled up in his big Continental, you know, on that old farm down there. And he wanted to see a friend of his who happened to be there. Clarence was talking with the editor of a Catholic journal and caught Millard's attention. And Millard, after they got through talking, went up to Clarence and said, "Look, I want to talk to you." Clarence said, "I'm busy. I've got to go out here and do some work on the farm. If you want to talk to me, spend the night and I'll see you tomorrow." So he spent the night. He spent the next night. He spent a month there. And Clarence told him the story. He said, "Well, I'd like to join up with this outfit." And Clarence told him the story of the rich young ruler. He said, "Go and sell what you have and give to the poor, and we'll take you in." And that's what he did. And Millard Fuller now is head of Habitat for Humanity. They're building homes all over the world. They've built over 200 homes in Zaire. They're building them in America's Georgia, where when the members of the Koinonia used to go downtown to buy something, somebody would walk out and beat them up, and then the victims were arrested for disturbing the peace and fined. That's what was going on. Now America's Georgia Chamber of Commerce says this is one of the finest things there is. And they're building houses right downtown in America's. Of course it's the finest thing ever. 5,000 to 10,000 people visit there every year. They come from all over the world. And of course that means that shekels come in, you know, to the community. It's interesting what difference money makes, you know. Yeah, one of Shakespeare said it makes the whopping widow wed again. Well, I wanted to talk today really about the theological vision of Clarence, but I don't have time. You'll want to raise some questions, and I'm just here to introduce Clarence. He couldn't be here, as the man who introduced me said, but let me call your attention to the fact that Millard came along with his wife, Linda. They were having trouble. They were about to divorce, and finally they joined up. Now this place called Koinonia Farm became Koinonia Partners. See, this guy is a genius and a businessman. As a businessman, he builds these houses without interest. And they've built over 40 or 50 of them right there on the Koinonia Farm for sharecroppers who've been thrown off the land. And so let me tell you what's going on here. First of all, as you know, Clarence has several books. The Substance of Faith is the most profound thing I think that he has. Now, Clarence came here in 40 and spoke in chapel. He was never invited back until 1968 when I became chairman of the lectureship committee. And see, I came up the old way. The old way was that the chairman of the committee did what he wanted to do and informed the rest of the members. That's literally true. That's what happened. But today you got to check it out with everybody under the sun. Up and down, over this way and around. Yeah, that's why you never get anything done. So I wrote Clarence and told him I want him to come here and give the Gean's lectures. And he said, why, you've challenged me with something that I just don't know whether I have it to do that or not. I don't know whether I got it in me, you know. Well, he'd just been lecturing at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Brown, Duke, and all of these places. But I knew what he was talking about. Can he come home to his alma mater? Because he was persona non grata. You see, the point is that some ecclesiastics praise dead saints and prophets, but they can't stand living ones. And so they have to die, and then we wipe their sepulchres and put them in our history books and claim them as our great heroes. Well, that's neither here nor there. Don't quote me on that, will you? I'm just a visiting professor here. I said the same thing in chapel years ago. Well, anyway, let me get on here. There are other books, too. The Cotton Patch Evidence by Dallas Lee. That's a comprehensive thing. There is a play, an off-Broadway play called The Cotton Patch Gospel. Anybody seen that? It is fantastic. I tried last year to get them to come to Louisville. I thought we had it sewed up, but they are doing so good in Dallas that they're going to sit there for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Maybe someday we'll get them here. It is one of the finest things I ever listened to. Well, we have a great film, an award-winning film on Clarence Jordan and the farm there. It's called Enough and Despair, and it was advertised, you know, to be shown here, and for some reason it was canceled. I don't know why. Well, maybe they'll show it sometime later. Well, they have all kinds of things going on there. Handcraft factory, clothes factory, pecan, cake, candy, you name it. They've got it. They've got an outreach program of education, a religious program, child development center, They have a youth ministries. They have an adult education program. They have farming and gardening. They have Habitat for Humanity, and this is what Millard Fuller is directing at this time. They also are related to Jubilee Partners and other organizations. Now, Clarence died in 1969. I was so happy that he got to come before he passed away. Now, I mean to speak to the whole seminary. He came back through here. He has a son-in-law who's a physician over here in Elkhart, Indiana. His daughter is the mayor of that town. And so he came through here, and he married a girl from this town, Florence Kroger. So he came through here, and I always have him to speak in my class, and we would sit in my office and talk for hours. Well, every time he'd speak in my class, he just like a Pied Piper. Two of my students got up and walked out and went with him to the farm. Well, that didn't go over too well, you know. So the last time we was here, he had to go to Evansville, Indiana. Students said, hey, he said, I'll take you. I said, well, I'll better just write him off too, because he'll never come back. But he did come back. That one did. Well, now, if you want to get on the mailing list, let me give you this right quick before we open up to questions. Here's a Koinonia newsletter. This is a January one. I wish I had copies of this to give to everybody, but it tells you about all their products and all that. And usually we have something to sell over here, and it goes into the Institute. Now, when Clarence died, I got a little group together, and I said, look, let's have a memorial service for him. I did the same thing for King here. And we went over, had a memorial service. And at the end of it, I thought to myself, now, here's a good idea. Let's just set up an institute for Clarence Jordan here. So I said, somebody get at the doors there with a hat and take up the collection as you go out. Well, that's the first time I think that was ever done. Anybody ever took up a collection at the doors? And there are several doors there, too, you know. So we got a good start right there. And I understand they have quite a bit of money in it now. They have people like Jim Wallace who's coming and who will be speaking in connection with the Clarence Jordan Institute. And I believe he'll be speaking to this group, too, here. He's editor of the Sojourners and a very dynamic speaker. So let me give you this address of the Koinonia newsletter. It's Route 2, Americus, Georgia, 31709. If you want to get on the mailing list. And they put out periodically what is called Koinonia Partners. Here's the history of the place. Yeah, very briefly done with pictures in it. There's Clarence's picture, and there's Florence and some of the houses they're building and all this and that. So, now, Clarence died in 1969. I went over to try to find his grave. Couldn't find his grave anywhere. Had a man with me that had been there for some time. He couldn't find it either. So I stood there in the midst of those pine trees, southwest Georgia, and I thought I could hear Clarence speaking, and I thought I heard him saying, well, Henley, Koinonia Partners is not exactly capitalism, but it works. It works. It's a Christian community. Now, it's interesting to me that the coroner would not even come out and pronounce the man dead. They had to take him in the back end of or in a station wagon or whatever. And maybe I ought not to tell this, but Carlisle Marnie, my friend for many, many years. We shared offices together at the seminary and he helped me in the old Haymarket Mission. We were over at the Vineyard over here at Carver School, and there were several people there, pastors from all over the United States. They were there. They were waiting for Marnie to come. See, Marnie would never set foot on this campus again after 1958, but he did come there because the Lilly Foundation gave him $68,000 to cooperate with a young man who's writing a PhD thesis. We were sitting there. I did not pay. So there's one chair left, and so I just sat there. I just wanted to see Marnie. And I moved over to the corner, way over in the corner. I thought, well, now if somebody comes in, I'll just get up and stand. Everybody's waiting for Marnie. Now, if you never knew Carlisle Marnie, you don't know the tension and the anticipation and expectation when this man came in to speak. So we waited. Then I heard his walk. I can just tell his walk anywhere, you know, just like I could Dr. Carver. Sound like an elephant coming down the hall, you know. And he walks in and everybody is looking, you know. He looked all the way around, looked over there and saw me. He just turned, walked over, put his hands on my head, kissed me, walked over and stood before everybody. Well, by that time, they didn't know what was going to happen, you know. And he said that he had just heard that the coroner would not come and pronounce Clarence dead. But when he did see him, he came out, looked at him, spat on the ground, and said, "The son of a bitch is dead," and signed the papers. Well, now that just gives you some idea of the tension and the feeling in that community. Well, maybe I shouldn't have told that, but that will give you an idea of the hatred. Who's been thrown out of a Baptist church lately around here for anything? You know, I feel uncomfortable because I haven't been thrown out. Okay. Questions? All right.
For almost 25 years, 42 to 58, where I met with not a great deal of success. In fact, you can call it just a failure, which is his family's love. That's a large chunk of time that had to be demoralizing and giving great sadness. How did he continue?
Well, his faith and confidence and belief in what was right. And what was right was that all Christians are children of God and should be treated as such. He was adamantly opposed to segregation. He was pro-peace. Matter of fact, he tried to get in the army because he said, "I didn't want to be 4D because 4D is made up of felons, retarded people, and preachers." He said, "I don't want to be in the category." But his point really was that he was going to resist, you see. What he believed, he believed that really that Christ was his Lord. He had gone all the way with Christ. And I'll give you an example. Now, when I say all the way with Christ, I mean to the point that he was ready to be crucified, that he practically was. he wanted his brother to serve as his attorney. But the man said, no, I have aspirations to go up the ladder, you see, in politics. And Clarence asked him, didn't the preacher say the same thing to you when you came in the church that he said to me when I came in the church? Yes. Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior and Lord? Yes. And he said, are you willing to accept that in reality, in substance? This is what he said. And are you willing to go all the way? He said, well, no, not quite all the way. He said, would crucifixion be the point where you would stop? He said, yes. Clarence never stopped at the point of crucifixion. He was ready to die for what he believed in because of his great faith in Jesus Christ. And that sounds very simple, but if you don't have that, you might as well forget it. That's what it's going to take. Okay.
In 1958 or 59, you had Clarence Sheridan in your class, meeting up to where the penthouse now is. And I came into that during the Clarence Sheridan speech. 58 or 59 was just 4 years after the Supreme Court decision on integration of schools. The civil rights movement hadn't had its successes yet. Segregation was already a dying horse. He said, when a horse is dying, a lot of times it kicks a lot. And you can see a lot of that energy kicking out there. And you can see that even segregation is now, he said. They're kicking a lot, but they're dying. And they're surely on the way out. And it gave a sense of hope that we were on the way. Probably remember about three different speakers who spoke in my whole seminary career here, and what they said, and that was, and he was so vivid, his picture of the dying horse, the segregation, he made such a deep impression, he spoke so strongly and so directly and so plain spoken, that he probably of all the speakers made the deepest impression. I used his book, series of sermons that I preached on pastor. The series was a big success because of Clarence Sheridan's sermon on the Mount, and I don't want to recommend that book. Get in touch with Clarence Sheridan. He lived the Sermon on the Mount, so he could say it straight.
Mm-hmm. His daughter really helped to integrate schools in America's Georgia. For 4 years, that girl was tormented. Nobody would eat with her, sit down and eat with her in that high school. They messed up her books, stole her stuff. They laughed at her. And when it came graduation time, she invited some of her friends. One was a black. And when they started into the stadium where they were going to have the graduation, the mayor of America's Georgia stopped and said, no, you can't go in. And so Clarence's daughter did was to go ahead and get in line. And the podium was right out in the middle. And all those chairs up there, you know, for the graduates. And when she got about halfway to it, she just turned left and went up into the balcony way over on the other side. And there was her empty chair. And somebody snuck up there and pulled it out, you know, so it wouldn't look so bad while the speaking was going on. Now, that's the kind of courage as children have. We can't understand, I don't think, the tension, the animosity, the feeling that prevailed in those days. You just had to live in it. You could just feel it. Okay. Well, I guess I've exhausted the whole crowd, but I hope you will come to hear Jim Wallace. And next year we'll try to have some products out there for sale and have it. Paul Simmons is in Cambridge, England, and he's the man that usually has this in charge. And he will, I'm sure, maybe calling on you to help him next year to help put this program on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.